I'll catch you manana. Uncle Sam's only man packing katanas. Remain anonymous while I'm leaving remains.
That's welcome to episode 32 of Upshift, No Direction Network's Essence 20 podcast, where every 2 weeks we give you an edge on Essence 20. I'm Ryan Costello, one of the designers of the Essence 20 system, author on the G.I. Joe, Transformers, My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebooks, and over a dozen other Essence 20 products.
And I'm Jason Keeley, former Renegade Game Studios RPG developer, and currently with Paizo.
And not like I was going to say, and currently leaving Upshift. I couldn't transition what you said. Anyway, fair enough. This is your last episode.
Yes, yes. I've got some other irons in the fire basically I want to have a spend some time with, and that kind of thing. So yeah.
I can relate to that.
Fair enough. Like we said last time, that we're sort of at the end of the things that I worked on with Renegade, basically. And so I don't really have a whole lot of insight on like what's next, what's coming out, what all the things that have been announced, for instance.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There is something I do want to get your insight on.
This oh, sure.
Be like a fairly casual episode, but there was one topic that I figured I'd throw at you. ICV2 recently listed its top RPGs in the top hobby channel TTRPGs for 2023, and Essence 20 is not on it. It's Dungeons & Dragons is number one, then Pathfinder, and that's been pretty standard for a long time.
Yeah,
Cyberpunk Red is number three, which surprised me. World of Darkness, So Renegade's on there at number four. Starfighter at number five. Warhammer 40K at six. Marvel Multiverse Role Playing is number seven. I actually expected that to be higher. Maybe it's just in my crowd that's got a lot of buzz. Number eight is Kobold Quarterly's 5e books. Number nine is Call of Cthulhu. And number 10 is Pirate Borg, which I haven't even heard about. So I'm just bringing this up because obviously within the Essence 20 sphere, it feels like Essence 20 is a very important role-playing game to the world at large. Everyone loves it. So it is kind of interesting to get this perspective that when ranked top 10, not only is it not on the list, but a couple of these games that I'm not even familiar with are on there.
Yeah, it's that list is, you know, is a small segment of like what is done, because I think it's mainly based on like retail sales.
Yeah, it defines it as the hobby games sales channel is defined as specialist game and card stores. It doesn't include Amazon direct sales, and it does not include Kickstarter.
So yeah, we don't know. It doesn't include Renegade is probably selling, you know, maybe selling a bunch of the books through their site, right? You know, they have that store, and so that if there's a chunk of sales from that, that's not showing up in there, so it's not coming out in that. It's interesting, like the number 10 being Pirate Borg is interesting because there's I think that's an offshoot of a game called Morkborg, which is sort of a dark fantasy kind of game. Yeah. They've had that and Cyborg, which is their sort of cyberpunk. And then I didn't even know that. I don't think I'd even heard of Pirate Borg, but I just kind of assumed that it's the pirate version of Morkborg. That being on there is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And something that all the other ones I have obviously heard of, not necessarily, you know, playing them familiar with what's going on. I feel like the Warhammer Fantasy stuff, there's like a new edition coming out soon, maybe that's been kickstarted or something maybe. Like that. Or
the only Warhammer on here is the 40K one from Cubicle 7.
Oh, the new 40K. Oh, right. 40K. Cubicle 7 has sort of picked up that license because the Warhammer role-playing game license has been kind of like done by a lot of different other companies, I think. Like the because it was Fantasy Flight who had the fantasy version a while back, which came with a bunch of cards and ruler templates and stuff like that. It was a very interesting box set that you could have. It was like almost bridging the gap between role playing game and board game on that.
Oh, cool.
I thought it was interesting. It had a lot of interesting stuff, but I don't think they're still doing it. And I don't know how much role-playing game stuff actually Fantasy Flight is doing anymore, because I remember just fairly recently, last year.
What Fantasy Flight is doing now?
I think they shut down their role-playing game division.
Yeah.
Like last year. So pretty recently.
They were the most recent publisher of Star Wars?
Yeah, they had the most Star Wars. It's an interesting story that I applied for a job to do the Star Wars role playing game when it was still in its infancy. I think they put out the PDF of the beta, and they were just in the process of making the beginner boxes, and maybe like the first one had sort of come out. So yeah, I got flown out to Minnesota to spend the night there. Essentially, it was pretty interesting that Fantasy Flight has like this. They have like a small campus, but they also have this games, like specific game store that is not attached to their offices, that was really near the hotel that they put me up in. And I went there the night after the interview just to check it out. And they would like, you know, it was a place where you could go play games, right? And they had the X-Wing miniatures game stuff going on, and, you know, other role-playing game stuff and other board games sort of set out. But it was kind of like it wasn't necessarily Fantasy Flight centric, but it was specific, but it was Fantasy Flight centric. So it was a nice little place to have, although there wasn't much else in the vicinity, because it was not the like a main, it was like a small, that was like a suburb of one of the big Minnesota cities.
I don't know if I can name a big Minnesota city.
Minneapolis.
Okay, yes, you're right.
I think that, yeah, I could be getting this all wrong. by the way, because it was so long ago. But anyway, I didn't get that job, obviously.
I mean, it's not like the job was there for much longer anyway.
I mean, that was just a long time ago. They put out the two Star Wars things. They started doing, you know, like they put out a lot of stuff since then. This was literally like over 10 years ago, over a decade ago.
Wow, yeah, they got the license that long ago?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Wow. I thought I was at the Gen Con where they launched it. Well, maybe I was.
You
I
might have been.
Yeah. I think my first Gen Con was around 10 years ago. No, it was because I've been at Laughing Dragon now, but before it was Blind Parrot, and I went to, I think, my third Gen Con with them. So yeah, no, it was easily. Mm-hmm. I've been going to Gen Cons for 12 years, I guess.
I mean, you have to realize that it's been 4 years since 2020.
Yeah.
Right. And so that doesn't seem possible, but yet here we are.
Yeah, well, like my brother's his stepdaughter is 10 and she was born in 2014, and those two things don't seem like the same amount of time.
No, they sure don't. It's what happens when I don't know. I don't know if it happens when you get older, that time seems to compress in a lot of ways.
I feel like our generation has aged very differently from the last couple of generations.
I mean,
the pandemic being part of it, but also the internet affecting just arrested development and how we process things as adults.
It's true. I will never stop playing games. I'm sure of it. Like I'm coming up. I'm going to be 50 next year.
Wow.
And so and I don't see myself stop playing video games or role playing games or board games anytime soon. Like I do a little bit less here and there because of the, you know, pandemic stuff and not seeing a lot of people. But you know, I've got my shelf of board games behind me there. Behind that is role playing games behind my head.
Mm-hmm.
I just love them, and why would I stop? I mean, I don't have any other sort of responsibilities in that sense. So I've got the time.
I will say, I don't know how many more gaming cons I plan on going to, like probably Gen Con and probably stuff that I'm going in a professional capacity, but I just went to Breakout in Toronto, and like it was fun and stuff. But the highlight of that con was seeing some friends from the area going to supper with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also into board games, and they're also in the area. If I'm going to drive to Toronto, I'd rather spend a weekend just at their house playing board games with people I know and games that I know I like. Like, I don't need to meet strangers and hope that they're cool and try new games, because I don't really have room for more games at this point.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been the thing for me in cons, has been, like, I've always had good groups, home groups, essentially, to do things with, and I don't necessarily need to go to cons to seek out people. I've always gone to cons pretty much as sort of professional capacity, and then I kind of like, ooh, what can I buy, and never crack a book open, right? Like but still exciting to see what other people are doing and what, you know, what's going on, but never necessarily to go to game at a con.
Right.
And unless it's you know, I've gone to like Board Game Geek Con a couple times, but I would always be playing with my friends there, so it was just like we'd meet up there and play games. So
why'd you even go to the con?
Well, I don't know, because Brooklyn Geek Con has an extensive library, and you can take out games and try new games, and you can go to the dealer room and check out new games. It was also about that, but it was mainly just sort of we'd go and we'd go like, oh, what are we playing? What are you doing? And then go to the different, you know, bunch of eat a bunch of fast food and play some more games.
So one of the reasons that I have such a dense board game collection is because I used to curate for Board Game Bento, and that ran for 2 or 3 years, and every month we would send 3 or 4 board games, which meant that every month I would have to play 5 or 6 board games to see what was going into it. Most of these were donated by the publishers who wanted to get in on the box, and I just got to keep them. And so I have a bunch of games, some of which I've only played once, some of which I didn't even finish a full game of, and yet I've still got them. And I could parse through my collections and get rid of some stuff. Maybe at some point. It's not worth the effort right now, but at some point I will have to scale back, especially if someday I want to add some more games to it. But I have all the themes that I like more or less covered, and I have mechanics that, like, I know if I want to play a deck building game, I've got my favorite one. So a game would have to be really impressive for me to want to get it and add it to my collection at this point.
Yeah, I mean, when we moved, I culled at least 50% of my board game collection, and kept some stuff that I only play like once. It's like this big blue game behind me there, over my shoulder. The one that's sort of at the end. Yeah. It's the one at the end. It's got like 4 little segments here. That's Sea of Legends, and I played it like once. It kickstarted it, and it's this, you know, big, massive sort of like piratey board game, and that's interesting. And I like it, and it is a thing where you do an app, and it kind of tells, you know, I don't know if you've ever played like Arabian Nights kind of like story. You can tell through the game, make a decision, and it does this, you know, when you get to this spot in the board. But the board is very sort of like, doesn't have specific things on it, or the cards don't have specific lots of text on them. It's sort of just a lot of like app connection. Very interesting. I was excited to keep it because it was cool and it comes with cool minis and stuff. But again, played it once. One of the ones I got rid of was a game that just was still in its plastic. And I played it at Board Game Geek Con and thought it was cool. It was a Portal game. And I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. It'd be fun to have the little Portal minis. And then I never actually took it out of the plastic once I got it home.
No, that's a shame. We had the Portal game in Board Game Bento at one point. It's a fun game.
It was fun.
It's like a 7 out of 10. And I know when you've got big collections of board games, a 7 out of 10 doesn't cut it anymore. But if you really like Portal, it's fun. It looks fun. And it's isometric board? It wasn't just straight. They were all like rhombus shapes, and it made moving a unique experience for that game.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. But again, it was just sort of like, I haven't played this in a while, so it's going to have to go. Oh, there's another thing going to Board Game Geek, too. You could get, when you went there, as part of the getting a ticket, was basically getting like 2 or 3 free games.
Nice.
And they weren't necessarily like super blockbuster games or anything like that. They, you know, would never be Wingspan or anything like that, but it was stuff. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Let me grab it and bring it back with me. There were a couple of those that I ended up having to cull. But, I think maybe it was, my copy of Takedo, was one of those. It was like later on in the lifespan of that. So it was an older game at the time. I was like, oh, I love Takedo. I'd love to own a copy of it. I'll take it for free. Sure. One of the categories, sort of, I guess, in that categories, the requirements is that I would check. There's a website called Board Game Arena that has a lot of games on it. And it's basically free to sign up for, but like a lot of the games are premium. So you would need one person to have a premium subscription to invite other people to play it. And a premium subscription is like, I don't know, like $24 a year or something like that. It's ridiculously cheap. And I was like, oh, can I play this on Board Game Arena? Yes. Okay. Well, then I don't really need the physical copy anymore for the most part. Yeah.
Couple of games that I've, you mentioned Kickstarter. So a couple of games that I went all in on Kickstarter. One of them was Anachrony. And Anachrony is a really cool game because it's got these like the plastic miniatures of mech suits, and you need to wear a mech suit to go to certain places on the board because it's just like you're on the verge of the world. You're on the verge of an apocalypse. And so you're using time travel to borrow resources from your past to save your present. And then there's all kinds of like time travel shenanigans that can happen. Technically, you could use the impact of the asteroid that's going to wipe out the Earth. You can use that to fuel a machine to stop it from happening. This is a very specific thing that can happen if you play your cards right. And it was very much advertised as this is a thing that can happen, but it doesn't doesn't happen that often. But normally your character is just like a cardboard pawn on a regular slot base, but you take him out and you can slide your character into the mech suit. And that's what really won me over. That is such a cool, like, I love toyetic board games. And so, so the theme is really interesting. I really like that element of it. We have set it up twice, but only played it once.
Oh, yeah.
The setup, the first time, like, with all the punching and stuff, it took us a good hour. It prepared us for the next time, because we just then cleaned it up. We said, we actually don't have time to play after all. But then the next time when we did finally get around to playing it, we were more prepared. We had more familiar with the components. So that's almost, I almost recommend, if you have a really big board game, even if you don't have time to play it, once you get it, just set it up. See what it's like, and that'll be a good way to prepare yourself for the future.
Yeah, big board games take a lot, sometimes take a lot of time to set up, which is another reason why I enjoy the board game arena stuff. It's just like, oh, the computer will do it for me.
The other board game that I went all in on was the Restoration Games did Fireball Island.
Oh, right, yeah.
I had a lot of nostalgia for that back when, you know, board games for kids had commercials on TV. And yeah, that's something that me and my brothers had. We played it tons. It was probably the main board game we played as kids. So I got the restored version, and then they also had expansions. So I've got a pirate ship expansion. I've got tigers that, you know, those plastic frogs, you press down on them and they jump. So it's like that. Yes, it's a tiger. Exactly. The tiger pounces. There's killer bees, which are yellow marbles that you can roll. I have played the main game 4 or 5 times, but I have not even opened most of those expansions because I've played the game with my kids and it feels like a more kiddie game, which it was originally. They're not that interested, and I can't just bring it out at an adult game night unless it's another group of people that specifically are nostalgic for Fireball Island and want to revisit it with new elements added to it. Right. So I don't know if I'll ever get around to playing with all of the expansions, but they are cool to have.
Yeah. I think Dinosaur Island was one that I kickstarted and got an expansion for. And I think we've played that once and haven't opened the expansion because that's the more here are the water dinosaurs, basically, is the expansion. And so I need to get into that. But that one, speaking of toyetic, that one has a fun, it has a slap, it comes with a magnetic slap bracelet.
Oh, cool.
And that is the first player token.
Oh, so nice.
When you're the first player, you get this lap bracelet, and it's all very it looks great because, you know, that the dice, one set of dice make them look like little bits of amber, you know, the whole thing has this sort of 90s vibe to it.
Right. Well, it has a Jurassic Park vibe.
It's also very neon, and, you know, it sort of combines the you know, the concept of Jurassic Park with the colorful aesthetic of the 90s.
Now, I know I've told this story before, and probably even to you, but at Breakout, the first Breakout I went to, or maybe the second one, I was getting ready to go. I was on the phone with my wife. I was like, you know, there's still another half hour of the con, but I don't really know what else I'm going to do. Or not a half hour, a half day of the con. Yeah. And then, like, right behind me, someone was like, does someone want to play test this game? And I was like, you know what? I am going to stick around. I'll play one more game. And it was Dinosaur Island, and they were working on it. And I got to see that while it was being developed. And then when it hit Kickstarter and it really took off, I was like, oh, that's fun. That's a game that I have some, a little bit of history with.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it did not have a slap bracelet at the time or amber dice or.
Sure.
It just had pictures of dinosaurs cut out and pasted onto cardboard.
I bet. Yeah. That's the whatever that was that called when you did the prototype.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Board games.
Not really what this podcast is normally about.
No, not normally. Let me transition, because I wanted to kind of ask you a sort of a question in this sort of, like, you know, bantery type episode. How many role-playing games are you playing in right about now?
Playing in? Nothing.
Not even
an Essence 20 campaign, which drives me nuts. Actually, when I was talking to that friend in Toronto, he convinced me that, no, get a game going, we should start it. And even if it means that I have to take on fewer projects, which is the main reason that I don't have time for play role-playing games,
because I'm
busy writing them. But that was the closest I came to finally getting a group together. I reached out to Kathy and Matt, who I've role-played with for years, and both of them are pretty busy. And then, like, the other people that I usually role-play with, like my friend Jeff, my friend Jay, they both have kids, and their kids are slightly younger than mine. So they're, like, earlier in that adulting or parenting phase. So I don't want to reach out to them. So yeah, I have one player for this Essence 20 campaign that I hope to finally start. It would either be a G.I. Joe game or it would be a crossover game, whatever people prefer. I'm flexible.
Yeah. It's the curse of A, sort of like, you know, how old we are, and B, working in the industry. It's so weird, like, when you, like, talk to a lot of people who work in the industry, how many of them are just like, I'm so busy doing industry stuff that I don't have time to play. And I think it's a shame, because I try to squeeze in as much as I can. And as of, like, today, I have realized I can do this thing where I end up overcommitting a little bit.
Right.
And then realizing, oh, no, I have a game, like, I think of the coming week. I have a game like every night for like 4 weeks, 4 days in a row. And it's, and then I have to figure out what, okay. And I did figure out what I need to like try to wrap up quick. Cause you know, I've got a game that's been, we've got a Outlaws of Alkenstar campaign that is hopefully wrapping up soon. Cause it's been about 2 years.
That's only a 3-volume AP.
And that's only a 3-volume. It takes a while, especially frankly. And I'm going to say this too. Like, lately it's, I'm good for about 2.5 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
And a game and a role playing, and it used to be like 4. I can maybe go 3. I can go 3. But 4 is always a bit tougher. And so it's taking longer to get through things. And even if there's like a 3-volume thing, like, yeah, it's going to take 2 years. And then we've had a lot of like sort of setbacks and whatever. And at some point I may decide to be like, hey, you guys, you know, we're really close to the end. Let's maybe meet up on a Saturday and just play for like, you know, 4 or 5 hours.
Those are great.
And yeah, those are fun. I love doing that. I love doing that. I do that a lot. When I could do more stuff in person, lived closer to the people that I would do that stuff with. It's funny. It's because when I got the job at Paizo and moved out to Seattle, it was like my gaming dropped right off for like at least 6 months. And it was just like getting used to everything, getting, you know, meeting new people. And then let's try to meet and do something. And we do and start a campaign, maybe get like a dozen sessions, 20 sessions or something at most. And then it would just sort of like, everyone got too busy and petered off. Yeah. And then it would be like, oh man, sometimes it'd be fun. We could do some playtesting of stuff. And it would be like brief spurts of things. But that was also kind of work related, right. You know, it's tough, but I've clawed back some time and all, like, honestly, and all of it is now been virtual. Like, you know, for the past 4 years, I've been just sort of fully virtual, fully getting into to Foundry, and running a lot of Pathfinder on that. And, you know, as we talked about, the first full session of the Scum and Villainy campaign that I'm running with Intrepid Heroes is this Tuesday. And as of like last night, I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'm, I have this weekly group, which is why we've gotten through a lot more stuff with the weekly group, instead of a bi-weekly group, which is every other thing that I'm running. I was like, oh, I think who's next to run? Cause we switched GMs up a bunch, and we just finished up a, like a Doctor Who campaign.
Oh, fun.
And it was like, oh, I think it's your turn. And like, oh, I don't have anything. And I said, I have a vague idea. And they're like, oh, that sounds good. You should run. I'm like, okay, great. So now I got to figure out what that is. But we usually do like I wouldn't even call it our session zero is watch some media related to the campaign that we're playing and sort of start to talk about characters. And then we maybe make characters the next session. So like that's why we can do this weekly. Cause we space out. We only play for like 2 hours. And so we, lose everyone else in that group is on the East Coast. I don't have to worry about prepping much this week for this week. Cause we normally play on Wednesdays and we finished up, we had to do because of people's schedules. We did something on Saturday. I was like, oh, we're going to do this Wednesday. That's not a whole lot of time. I haven't picked a system yet. I just have this vague, like, I want to do basically sort of like this. So like Spider-Verse type campaign, cool. Where like we together make a hero. And then everyone gets to riff on that hero. Are you the cowboy version? Are you the vampire version?
That's cool.
The noir version. So, you know, that sort of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what everyone wants to do. We may end up rolling randomly on a bunch of superpower tables to see what kind of character we get. And then, so I'm looking for, and if you know of anything, besides, we can't watch the entirety of Spider-Verse and we've all seen it, right? I've been looking for other sort of media that has that conceit in it, or at least in it. It seems like the Batman of the Multiverse from Batman Brave and the Bold only really show up at the ends of these episodes that they're in.
Right.
So I'm trying to find
Rick
if there's
Morty
anything
does
else.
Stuff like that all the time.
Rick and Morty does do stuff like that on time, but I don't think my my group likes Rick and Morty.
Okay,
fair. I don't think I can show that to them. I like Rick and Morty, right. And I like when they do that kind of stuff. I just need like Fantastic Four, Council of Reeds kind of thing, right? Like that was never really done in any kind of like animation, was it?
So, is there a reason you just don't say we've all seen Spider-Verse? So let's just go with Spider-Verse. I feel like Spider-Verse 2 really goes extreme with it.
I think what I'm going to do is take, I found that it's like my 7 minutes of that part where they're like, get Spider-Man, right? And then we're like, Spider-Man, did you Spider-Man? Did you Spider-Man? And then you see like so many Spider-Mans. You see the T-Rex Spider-Man and the Cat Spider-Man. I'm going to show that, like, just to sort of like show up. Here's all the things. But I don't know. We like, you know, we like to watch something a little more than that. And sometimes we don't. Sometimes we watch a full movie, like a full 90-minute movie that's terrible. And sometimes we'll pick an episode of a TV show or two episodes of a short anime or something like that. So something, if I can find something, if we can't find something, I'll be like, everyone go watch Spider-Verse because you know what it is.
Any example that comes to mind, it's a lot about characters being in a new world and the world is totally different. And maybe they'll bump into some of their friends that are different a couple of times. But it really isn't as like just concentrated and as varied as Spider-Verse. Which I think really is what you're going for. You really want one of them is the dinosaur version of the hero.
Basically something like that. And when they'll get plucked out of their universe. I don't have any idea what the plot is because I just had this idea and was I'll
have
guess.
Have you watched What If yet?
Yeah, I'll watch some What Ifs. Maybe I'll do a What If. Yeah.
The second season has a lot more. It's not like, here's the story you're familiar with. It really is just like, here's a weird idea and we're casting characters you know.
I didn't finish season two. I really wanted to get to the 1602.
The last three episodes of season two are amazing.
Yeah, I got to go back and watch those because it was, there was just something like at the beginning, I was just like, I don't know who these people are.
The Nebula one?
I know Nebula. It was just, there was somebody else who was just like.
Well, there was one character that was original to What If.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. And I was like, is this a new one? Is this, with the. The cube coming crashing down on the did watch that one. It was good. I can't remember. There was another earlier. It was interesting to be the one was like the Avengers 80s Avengers kind of situation where it was like the younger when original Hank Pym was younger and other people who I can't remember were in that one, but when Peter
Goliath was on that team and yeah, who was on that one? Anyway, we don't have to dwell on it. Maybe I'll have to rewatch that one again because I don't really remember the details of that one. Oh, wait, no, Captain Carter was on there.
Was Captain Carter on that one? I don't remember.
Wasn't she the Captain America of the team?
She's definitely in that season bit more because they showed the Captain Carter happen. It was like what if Captain Carter was in Captain America Winter Soldier kind of situation. It was like Captain Carter sort of trying to, it was because when Steve was basically got Winter Soldiered.
Yeah.
What if
Captain Carter fought Hydra Stomper?
Yes. That's what it was. Hydra Stomper. Yeah. 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 And he was in that. And so that was kind of like a nod to that. And then she gets pulled into 1602, I think. Right. I think that's what is the conceit of that. That's an interesting way to do it, to do it with time travel, not just be like, here's what's happening at 1602. But I don't think she was in the 80s of Avengers, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. If not her, anyway.
Anyway.
I think that's enough. Dwelling on what if episodes we only kind of remember.
So basically, I'm running four games and playing in a fifth that meets about once a month.
Wow.
It's a lot of stuff. And again, sort of like, trying to wrap up one of them. The Scum and Villainy one will be a short thing. The Wednesday one is just sort of constant, but I'm only running it for, again, it'll be like, four or five sessions. And then, cause I want to sort of, again, we'll clear the Scum and Villainy slate. Cause I'm excited for the Starfinder 2 beta. And I want to kind of get into that and maybe run it a little bit.
That's exciting. Your podcast and No Direction Beyond, just both casually peppering in the updates that are going with Starfinder 2. Starfinder has always interested me and just came out right when, you know, I had my first kid. And so it was not a time where I was going to be adding a second system to my life, even if it was a system already fairly close to one that I was already familiar with. And I was like steeped in the community and everything. So yeah, Starfinder's just always kind of been the one that got away.
Fair. It's been, you know, an interesting watching this sort of like, and then sort of like being there at the beginning and then sort of stepping away and then watching the sort of evolution of how it's moving forward is really interesting. And I'm excited, again, just getting me very excited to think about like the things that they want to do. And the, just because once I started, when I was still doing Starfinder stuff, I was getting a little bit like, this is getting a little creaky, all this, you know, the system itself. And I'm just sort of, you know, excited to see something new and that world, because it's a good world. It's good fun. Lots of fun stuff in there.
Yeah. Well, I've always appreciated how small the team is. Like, it's probably on your side, that was one of the bigger challenges, but just made Starfinder feel familiar the whole way through. And especially when Starfinder Society really seemed to be catching on. And so the people involved in Starfinder Society were just kind of graduated into the main Starfinder positions. And that was cool. It was cool to see you're good at one thing, and so you get more opportunities. Like that arc that it feels like how things are supposed to work, it totally worked for Starfinder. And that was nice.
It totally did. Yeah. It's just, there's just this sort of an unfortunate amount of like how big the team was allowed to get, you know, because of, you know, like putting the budgets in and all that stuff. So it's always pretty tricky to keep it at the size that was could do stuff and put up enough stuff to justify its existence, but also not, you know, not work people to death, which was pretty close.
Yeah, I get it. Well, I mean, on the Pathfinder side, I remember when just a couple of extra hardcovers were thrown on in Pathfinder 1E towards the end, they started throwing out like the god centric hardcover. And so just a few extra hardcovers were being added to the schedule, and it just felt like nothing was being made to accommodate it. It was just extra work was being put on that team. And you could tell in like the subtext of the interviews that I was doing that this was stressing people out.
It's very stressful. It was a lot of that. And I think honestly, like Paizo's gotten a lot better about that, especially in the past couple of years with the sort of unionization of the team. And just sort of like knowing and the people who basically are getting into the management positions who were in all of those positions before and understanding fully that not that the management didn't necessarily understand before, but it was always just sort of like from even further up was just sort of all this pressure coming down. But now it's been like everyone sort of understands we can't do it like that anymore. That's why the remaster books are getting sort of thrown in, everything else kind of got shoved along a bit. And so it's why the Tian Sha books and Howl of the Wild are basically kind of like taking longer to have come. If you worked on those books as a freelancer, it's probably been like two and a half years since you've written whatever it was. And they're only just coming out sort of now. It was just because of the shift that had to happen for the remaster.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the position where I'm kind of aware of what's happening. And they mentioned on the main No Direction podcast that they, as in Esther and Navar, that they're looking forward to Tian Sha coming out. And I was like, is that still not out? That I've heard about that for years.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of like announced not even like a December.
Yeah.
A year prior right before to the OGL this previous stuff. December. Right before the OGL stuff happened. And so it's got pushed. So it could be part of the you know, now all the rules elements in it are compatible with the remaster stuff. So that had to be essentially sort of like done twice.
Been put out before remaster with no worries about OGL legality, who wants that to be the last book of the edition? Yeah. You know, it's not a full edition phase out, but it's still, this is the last one that's not going to be completely compatible with the next stage of this game. But it totally makes sense. It's just when you're not paying attention, it's shocking to realize how long this one's been in the
hopper
production. Yeah. In the hopper.
It's kind of interesting that commendable to the teams that the Rage of Elements, which is sort of pre-remaster, is actually in the remaster, but it's not it's still OGL technically,
right?
But they knew some of the stuff they were going to do in terms of like terminology. They did that first to say like, oh, now we're just, hey, look, here's a little sidebar at the beginning. Like, you're going to see some things here that don't match current Pathfinder, but because what we're doing later it was forward compatible, which is just kind of cool, because everyone would have been like, oh no, the kineticist, the class that everyone wanted the most, right, doesn't match the remaster. That when are you going to redo it? I'm like, well, we can't, you know, exactly, you know, can't redo these books, like short of redoing, you know, Advanced Player's Guide and some of the bestiaries, but like, are we going to go back and redo Guns and Gears or whatever? And like, you know, redoing things is not very interesting, but you know, we want to move forward and do new things. So it's tricky. It's tricky. It's a really tricky setup. It's going to be this tricky, this kind of, until, I don't know, Pathfinder 3rd edition comes out. Yeah. Then we can all just sort of start the clock over again.
Well, I in my experience with Paizo staff and Paizo freelancers, they're really industry savvy. So I think as soon as the OGL stuff started happening, people had already like fantasized about what they would do to update 2E in ways that, you know, the last few years in its life cycle, or yeah, the few years of its life cycle, have realized, oh, had we been ahead of this curve, then this would be a more modern version. And so this was like an opportunity to do that. And so they didn't look at Rage of Elements and say like, how are we going to make this post OGL compatible? They were like, we know exactly what we want to do. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot about the Rage of Elements too that isn't like so steeped into like lore stuff, you know what I mean? Like how Galarian and all the D&D lore is, you know, it was always sort of a kissing cousins.
Right.
But
I
now, like,
hate that expression.
I know, I hate it too.
But I get it.
It's always the first thing that pops into my head. But like with all this sort of, we're sort of talking about new elemental planes. We're technically adding two planes, which sets it apart from D&D, making it as much, you know, Paizo IP as possible. So there was a lot of it that didn't need to change. It was just, now here's just some game terminology that sort of needed to be tweaked. And then we can also just be like throwing out alignment. Great, because, you know, elemental planes are all just sort of neutral anyway, for the most part, you know. So that didn't really like alter anything probably, right? Like it was probably very much just crossing off a couple letters on the stat box, and that was all you really needed to do.
We should probably be wrapping up soon.
Sure, yes.
We should probably give people that are here for the Essence 20 content a little bit of Essence 20 content on the way
Let's
out.
Let's do it.
Yep. Anything that you are going to miss? What are you going to miss the most about not working on Essence 20?
Here's the thing. Is like, I've never been as steeped into sort of G.I. Joe and Transformers lore as someone like you and some of the other people. But I like, it was enjoyable just sort of like thinking about that kind of thing and like how to translate that kind of IP into sort of game terms and in general terms, get more or less the feel of it than necessarily like, oh, this is exactly what this character does, you know, like taking characters and translating them one for one. But that was fun, and I really like I'm excited to see what the Enigma of Combination book looks like when it finally hits.
It's out to like the people that pre-ordered, but
people
not
pre-ordered that
mass release, right? Is that it?
Yes, maybe. If we got the PDF out there,
I think that is actually at full release at this point.
Okay, great.
I haven't really been following. I'm right now in the Enigma Combination thread on Discord server, and there are hundreds of posts since the last time I looked in here. So
okay.
Yeah, every now and then I get called in because I'm kind of the guy on Discord that's still connected with the company that knows the system the most, but like,
yeah.
I don't know anything about, like, I know that Combination has some similarities to Zords, but it also differences, and I don't even know Zords very well. And so when they come in and it's a very specific question, there's only so much I can do to help.
Yeah, it was tricky to sort of in a way update the sort of Zord stuff into the Combination stuff, because it was more like a lot of, you know, me learning it at the time too. Like, essentially, like, I didn't know that much about how the Zords worked when I started thinking about the book, and then getting the text and looking at it, like, how does that work, and how does that actually work, and how should it work, and trying to sort of tweak it here and there. At the time too, oh my god, it's really remembering at the time going into the errata for Power Rangers and Transformers and G.I. Joe and wondering if that ever got actually put out.
Yeah. Every now and then there's something that I will put into the errata document as like a suggestion, like the engineer origin perk for G.I. Joe doesn't really do anything. It's just vague, broad terms. I was like, we should like nail this down. Here's the language I suggest. And then every time I do anything that references the engineers, I got to look and see like, is this anywhere other than this one errata document? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, I did like do things to files.
Right.
So that they just need to be reprinted or something, but I don't know if that ever finished, got fully finished.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. but you know, the people that I don't work with Ben. I'm excited that Ben is sort of like really up in it. Really sort of the face of the SS20 development and design now, because I enjoyed working with him and sort of in a little way showing him the ropes, kind of getting him up to speed to be able to do this. And I'm glad that they decided to, because he was just doing Addis contract work at the time when I was working with him. But so I'm glad they fully hired him up.
Yeah, I've been working with Ben a lot more closely lately. I feel like I've been working with him more closely than I did with you or Kevin. Like basically when it was Elisa was kind of in that production job right at the beginning, she was super hands-on with everybody, but with so many people that like,
yeah, it's tough.
You know, it was a lot of people, but now with Ben, it feels like he and I are kind of the veterans of the system. And so I'll throw something out there. He will come up and like, here's the production side that you might not be thinking about. It's like, okay. So then, and then we adjust and we make plans together.
Good. Good.
Yeah. It's been working out
here. Nice.
Well, there's some fun stuff coming out for SS20 that I hope you stay abreast of, and you can check out and see how the system is developing and the other directions that we go with some of the lines.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always like looking at other systems. Like I, you know, again, I can't quite see from the back there, but like I'm got my fingers into everything I can reasonably look at. I'll buy books too, and not fully read them, but flip through them because, you know, I like to know. It's my job, right? It's part of my job. So I need to be sort of abreast of all the other things that are going on out there.
All right. Well, I don't know if we're going to have an episode of Upshift in 2 weeks. It might be me solo. It might be me testing out a guest co-host. Okay. Or I might just take a couple of weeks off because I have two deadlines and I got to stay on top of them.
It's fair. It's fair. Yeah. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
I say. Yeah. And all the things, all the deadlines and whatnot. Thank
you. Well, you good luck to you in your future and these
thank you
projects that you've been alluding to, but I don't know if we can talk about anything.
I can't quite. There's like mostly some of it's actual industry stuff and some of it's like some personal stuff that I would love to get back onto because it's actually been like 3 or 4 months since I've dug into it.
Yeah,
maybe we'll see. I might have my own Kickstarter in a couple months. Maybe. Right, well, I don't know. I said that now that I've said that. Now that I've said that, it's not, you have to. Not gonna happen, but I have to, now I've locked it in. It's something I want to do. So.
All right. Keep us posted.
I will.
Until next time. If you want to know more about, or if you want to hear other great gaming podcasts like this one, you can go to nodirectionpodcast.com. We want to thank our patrons. You can help us keep the lights on, keep our servers running by going to patreon.com/nodirection. And we need to thank Word Burglar for the use of Letter from Snake Eyes Part 4. You can find out more at wordburglar.com. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jason Keeley. And be sure to listen to Paizo Live on April 16th for part of what I've been sort of alluding to.
Okay. I wasn't expecting a plug at the end. Sorry, I should have given you a chance for some shout-outs.
No, that was it. That was it. I thought I'd just throw it in there.
All right, excellent. Well, see you, everyone. Next time, for the next episode of Upshift.
And see you in the stars and other places. Trust me, some things are better left unsaid, except my demons that were screaming like the undead. I let them in every day, my main meditation was taking them down, my pain medication. Shanna sighed, and she knew she couldn't call me, at least until I found out what happened to Tommy. That mission was private, for now the objective was stopping the threat of this venomous collective spreading across the globe. I was ready to lock and load with flash, grand slam, clutch, zap, and rock and roll. Hawk, steal a grunt, breaker, and short fuse. Before I knew, I gained a whole lot more to lose. Accept the fear, don't let it scare you. When you move with the wind, no one can hear you. Fate's your friend one day, the next it takes lives.
assume the worst.